Okay, so again, just to remind everyone, this is an official verifiable claims task force call. Calls being recorded and minuted. If anybody does not want it to be recorded or minuted, or sorry, if anybody does not want it to be recorded, please speak up and tell us to not publish the audio minutes. Otherwise, the default is to publish the audio minutes. Okay, let's take a look at our agenda. Agenda is here. On the agenda today, we're going to talk a bit about the interview narrative so far. So we're hearing back from a number of industry experts that have been in this field for 10 and 15 plus years. We're kind of hearing about their trials and tribulations in the space to make sure that we don't make the same mistakes that they did. We have to also talk about how we're going to respond to those narratives. We have a bit of use cases document stuff to cover today, and we have a draft charter proposal that I just want to point everyone to. This is the draft charter proposal is based off of input that we've gotten from folks doing interviews so far. It represents what there seems to be consensus around with respect to what we could realistically achieve in the short term. Any other updates or changes to the agenda? Anything else that we need to discuss today? All right, if not, let's go ahead and get started. Brian, remember to put the person's name, colon, and then what they said. Otherwise, it just shows up as an unattributed comment. All right, first up, interview narrative so far. We have had input from Brad Hill. So let me put this in, Brad Hill's input. So just to be clear, every single one of these people are providing input in their personal capacity. Brad Hill does work for Facebook, but he is not making these comments based off of, you know, an official comment from Facebook. He's making it as a person that's been involved in the space and the security space for a while. Same thing with, let's see, Jeff Hodges. Jeff Hodges' input is here. Jeff Hodges is with PayPal, but again, his input is his own personal input. Jeff's been very involved in the creation of multiple, you know, identity-related standards. I think he goes all the way back to the LDAP days. He's been involved with SAML, been involved with FIDO and a variety of other things like that. And then we have Harry Halpin's comments here. Harry Halpin's input is here. Harry is again providing input based on his personal, it's personal input. It's not official W3C input and his experience, you know, about his experience in the space. And then the latest one, let me try and find it, is from David Singer's input. So David Singer kind of put his thoughts very briefly in there. Okay, so based on, we still have a number of other interviews to do. So we still have Descartes from Amazon that's going to provide input. He's done a lot of Identity 2.0 stuff. We're going to have Christopher Allen, who's the co-author of the TLS specification, FSL and TLS specification, which secures the vast majority of the web. So he's agreed to do an interview, and we've got Drummond Reed, who's been working at Oasis on a variety of different identity credentialing initiatives for the past 10 plus years. And Drummond Reed's also going to provide input. But to date, the input that we've gotten back is starting to form a narrative. And I think David Singer's input, or his summary is the best one so far. One of the things that's a bit frustrating with some of the input that we're getting is we're getting people that have been very involved in the space saying that they're too busy to really look deeply into it, but here are some high-level thoughts. And unfortunately, some of those high-level thoughts are not very, the input's not that educated because they didn't have a lot of time to look at the stuff that we've been working on. For example, David Singer has said, you know, this is a well-trod road. You know, many people have been down this whole credentialing identity thing. What are we doing that's different from the previous initiatives? The VCTF page very clearly outlines, or at least we felt very clearly outlines, what those differences are. So it's the it's basically the ramifications of user-centric versus service-centric ecosystems. That's the case. So let me find the link to that. Unfortunately, I don't have the link handy. Design approaches. So we outline clearly what the differences are. So we outline it on the page, some of the people that are providing input didn't really understand that that's what we're asserting is different this time around. David Singer also says, you know, don't tie it just to payments, make sure that it's broader and more independent. So make sure that the credentials can be used in the payments industry and the education industry and healthcare. I think there's broad agreement in this group that that's what we want to do. But there's also this assertion that this may be an intransigent problem, that we may be trying to solve something that is fundamentally unsolvable. And then, you know, of course, general statements like don't make any assumptions in the problem statement about, you know, client this or server that, and feel free to analyze why previous attempts have not gotten traction. So again, we have done that analysis over the past year. We have put it up, you know, have put the result of that analysis up on the page, but the folks that have said that they don't have enough time to look into what we're doing but are providing feedback, they aren't putting those things together. There's still a lot that's just there's a lot that's unsaid, and the folks that are giving us feedback are kind of missing it. Okay, so I think let me stop right there and see if there are any questions from anyone. Did anyone read the comments that these folks sent in, and do you have any high-level thoughts on it about the narrative or what they're saying?
Well, one thing I was going to say is that we still need more of the analysis that we've done in clear, focused papers or blog posts or something for each previous technology that we have analyzed. So we need to get that material up there so people can look at that and provide feedback on it as well.
Right. So that goes to the first main narrative. It's basically there's this assertion by Jeff Hodges and Harry Howell.
Sorry, who was the last speaker?
That was
Dave with a cold.
Oh, okay.
go ahead, Shane. I'll put myself on the queue.
Thanks. I guess I just wanted to sort of reiterate what Dave said. I think we're in a situation where we need more talking points, and I don't mean just so we can talk about them, but so that people who are reviewing things have a concise thing to look at. There's a lot of data that we've accumulated over the last year plus, and we're not doing a good job of exposing it to people, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep, agreed. What to do about that? So one of the narratives that is coming out is people are saying the technology to do what you want to do already exists. Just use that, right? We don't see what the big problem is. And so there's this assertion that, you know, you should use OAuth and you should use OpenID Connect, or you should use Jose and JWS. And while we've done analyses on those technologies and found them lacking, we haven't actually written that up anywhere and put it up. It's kind of still kind of tribal knowledge in the group. So I think, unfortunately, one of the outputs from the Verifiable Claims Task Force is going to have to be a detailed analysis, gap analysis on those technologies and why they're not sufficient. Just because we've outlined that stuff many times over on the mailing list doesn't mean that these people, you know, can find it easily. Henry, you're on the queue.
I think there's a huge war in this space, technical and all kinds of war, and the problem with, of course, asking you to show how you're different from others is that it's a way of trying to get you to make yourself enemies too, right? Because if you, for example, distinguish yourself from Jose, which one could do by saying, well, Jose is tied to a syntax. It's not web. It's not ready for the web because perhaps it doesn't have. It can't deal with signatures on graphs in different syntaxes. Then you raise the eyebrows of that whole community, and they start feeling threatened, and so you get people against you. So the tricky thing is how does one point out what the differences are without also making oneself more enemies, right? Because otherwise these attempts at asking you to distinguish yourself from enemies is a way of getting you politically to commit suicide.
I think that's an excellent point, Henry, and I think you're right. We really need to be careful about that. I think as a general strategy, we know what doesn't work. So what doesn't work is basically coming up with a list of all the ways, you know, Jose and JWK are deficient and making it, talking about it in a generalized way, like in general, you know, this is why Jose is deficient, because that argument pretty much goes nowhere. It just goes back and forth, and you end up arguing on generalities. What we might do instead, you know, we have some very specific use cases and some very specific things that we want to express and, you know, digitally sign. And so what we can do is we can talk about those specific use cases and what the end result ends up being if we pull in OAuth and OpenID Connect and Jose, or we pull in the credentials work, and we can basically show them, look, this is what signed data looks like in Jose with the type of credentials that we're trying to express. It's a big Base64 encoded blob that's completely opaque to developers, and that doesn't meet some of our use cases. And then we can show them, you know, here's an alternative way of looking at it. And at least at that point, you narrow the scope of the discussion down to an actual problem that you're trying to solve, rather than keeping it at a general level. So instead of it becoming this, you know, our community is better than your community, you know, argument narrative that happens, which we do not want to find ourselves in. Instead of that, you find yourself talking about actual technical requirements. Does that seem like an acceptable approach? Like, if we frame things like that, do people feel like we're going to end up having a better outcome?
So this is Greg Kidd. Manu, I like that. I mean, I'm one of the people working on a specific use case, which is allowing two different communities, one that's from the digital currency community, the other is from the remittance community, to have a common set of credentials so those two communities can be interconnected. And we would welcome a chance to do a a reference implementation and get feedback from this group as to where we're on track versus off track with sort of operating to best practice. So it's not a universal case, it's a very focused case, but it would like to be compliant with the principles of this group.
Yep. Yep. So I guess your fundamental point is, can you restate your point? Sorry, our scribe lost audio. Could you restate your core point, Greg?
Well, the point is, I'm a bit intimidated by looking at all the pushback from all those different individuals. But the advantage of this group is not any particular technology, but a governance process. So if we work on a specific reference implementation under the, treat this group as an advisory group, as to the pros and cons of what we're doing, we may not achieve perfection, but we can be an example of a group trying to work on a reference implementation of the principles from the group. And the strongest thing this group has is a governance process to, you know, to work through these differences. And so we would like to be under the guidance of a governance process as opposed to tied to any typical technical implementation.
Right. Yeah, and I think that's one of the strengths of the W3C process is it helps you find consensus, especially in really technically difficult situations like what we find ourselves in. So, you know, we've got a number of people saying the technology already exists, just use it, and we have a number of other people saying the technology that exists isn't good enough. And so we need to drill down into the people that are saying the technology exists, just use it, have to demonstrate how we can actually address these use cases with it, and the people that are saying it's not good enough need to do the same thing, right? And we've seen this process play out many, many times before. I mean, just about every single time a W3C standard, you know, or ITF standard is created, you go through this process where you have a bunch of experts arguing about what the right technical path is, but eventually we come to consensus. The problem, of course, is that it takes time to do that, there's a bit of a concern that folks in this group or in the credential CG are starting to get a bit wary of these, you know, people saying that you should be using a different technology, not the ones that you've been using. So Greg, I think you're right. We've got a good governance process and mechanism to work through the technical details. And the question is, are people in this group going to be patient enough through that process, or do they feel that, you know, this is better done elsewhere? And I have no idea where, you know, the elsewhere would be.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is I have, you know, invested, we have an entire couple of development teams that are willing to sort of submit to the guidance of this group. And so we expect there to be a consensus process that we are willing to work under from this group. And I'm not saying it'll be perfect, but we do have a very practical set of use cases that we think is perfect for operating under the principles that this group has been talking about.
Great, and that's fantastic. And I think we would like to hear directly from your developers about the technical, because a lot of the times that we make progress are the times where we're actually talking about the technical stuff. We're not talking about philosophy or high-level ideology. While that's important to talk about at some point, you know, the places that we really see progress is when we have a solid use case submitted and we take two technologies and try to address that use case with both of them. And by the end of that analysis process, we tend to know which one, you know, which approach is a bit better than the other approach. So that's great, Greg. You know, I don't know if you could convince one or two of you folks from your dev team to join while we have these conversations. Okay.
Well, my suggestion is we'll put forth a plan to this group, and this group will, you know, will give feedback as to where they think we're off track versus on track. Like this group is,
yep.
To me, this group, like I'm not competent to make that assessment, nor do I want to, because I'm not actually interested in technical truth. I'm interested in a governance process that will help us go over time through a period of many different technical arguments. But the thing I'm most interested in is the endorsement from a governance process rather than getting technical purity.
Right, right. Yeah, and I mean, that's, you know, I think that's exactly what the W3C can provide. It's a governance process for how you come to, you know, the right set of technologies to address a certain set of use cases. And it's, you know, it's a well-run process. So yes, I mean, by all means, please, you know, submit stuff to the group, and then we can provide feedback. That helps us make progress. Okay, so as far as, you know, how to address these narratives, so the general narratives are, what are you doing that's different from all the other initiatives like this that have come before? How is what you're doing specifically different from Jose and OpenID Connect and those things? So do a technical analysis, do a technical gap analysis, and then effectively, you know, make sure you're not reinventing the wheel, or if you do reinvent the wheel, tell us exactly why you're doing it. So there's a lot, and do all of this in a way that isn't divisive, that doesn't drive a wedge between, for example, us and the Jose community, or the OpenID community and you know, the verifiable claims work. So it seems like one of the outputs of this group is going to have to be a report of some kind that gathers all this input together. And then it says, you know, these are the gap analyses that we've done, and that input gets taken into the working group, and then the working group, you know, executes on that. Henry, you're on the queue.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, last time I came, this new group was just there to create the use cases, right? So the problem is, how can you actually answer a question that says, I mean, currently you can't say, well, we have a technology, because you're just trying to put use cases forward, right?
Right.
So you can't even say, I see where, how you get there. You can't actually say this is better than this. You can just say, well, we'll try all of them, right?
Right.
So really, yeah. The question is, are these use cases new and can't be done by anybody else? And that's perhaps the only thing to see where the holes are. I understand that. I get it.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, I think the other issue with some of the interview feedback is that they're jumping ahead to the technical solution instead of kind of looking at the use cases that we have and providing input and seeing if we have the problem statement correct. So, you know, that's another issue. So all this to say that the input that we're getting from these experts, at least is my personal feeling, isn't as good as it could have been had they engaged more deeply. And we may go back around to them and say, hey, you know, thanks for the input, but we already know 60% of what you said. What we were really hoping is, you know, what we were really hoping for is more specific feedback on the problem statement and, you know, whether you think there is something that should be done in W3C. And to get that kind of feedback, what we might need to do is put a charter in front of them so that they have something more specific to look at. Usually when you boil what we're doing down to actual official W3C working group charter text, that's when people start having pretty strong opinions about, you know, certain text in the document. Okay, so just to go back, I think one of the takeaways here is that we have to respond to this input in a way that results in documentation we can point to. We don't have that right now, and we need to start creating that because we're just going to keep going around and around in the same circle. that we have been without those documents. Dave Longley, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said, but I wanted to add that I think that this mostly applies to the three non-interview emails that we got in response, just because those particular experts did not have a lot of time to actually sit down and review this stuff and talk through it with us. I think we got a lot more comprehensive input from Brad Hill, for example, who we actually did an interview with, and I would expect us to get better input as well with Dick Hart and David Chadwick in the future, and whoever else, Drummond Reed and Christopher Allen, because they just have a little bit more time in their schedule to be able to devote to talking through all of the issues that we've raised. So I want to make clear that when we're saying these experts, we're actually talking about effectively three experts who have responded who are very short on time. And so I don't know how much more we could actually get out of them. I do agree that we need the documentation. It needs to be out there. But if they don't really have the time to review it anyway, I don't know how much more we could have gotten out of those three experts. But we certainly want to have that there for people who do have time.
Right. Yep. I absolutely agreed. The other point to make is that I've heard from a couple of people in the group that they're becoming a bit frustrated that we already have a lot of experts in the credentials community group, a lot of people that have been working in education that have been kind of blazing the trail, and they don't understand why some of these experts get to come in, not really take the time to learn about what we're doing and provide input, and then all of a sudden the entire group has to kind of jump and respond to them. Just to be clear, the feedback that everyone in the group that has given us is vitally, vitally important. What we're doing now is trying to find out if there's anyone that disagrees with our analysis. And that, it doesn't mean that just because we have three people that said they don't have the time to really participate at depth, but they don't really get it. It doesn't mean that means we're not going to do the work. It means that we need to address that communication gap in some way, and either get them to respond or get them to say, you know what, I don't have enough time to devote to this. Longley, you're on the queue again.
Right. I'm very wary of duplicating work or having other people have to contribute work in a different way, but it might be a good idea for us to consider having some of the experts, since we do already have experts in the group, some of them could give some feedback either through interviews or just through their own emails that they submit with their own thoughts, because we do have experts who have also been in the space who are already in the group. And to get that kind of feedback on equal footing with the feedback we've been receiving from those who have been outside of the group for a while might be a good idea.
Yep, absolutely agreed. To put a bit finer of a point on it, many of these folks that we're interviewing think that, when myself or Dave Longley come back with feedback or input, that it is not mirrored by the people in this group. Like, people in this group, they're not hearing from you. So, let me just specifically point people out. So, Brad Hill said, I don't see where the business model is for the education community. I don't think it exists, right? Or I haven't seen anything that's compelling that the education sector, that's going to change anything in the education sector. I don't think there's a business model there. It doesn't seem like they're really interested in pursuing that, or I can't see, I don't see that. So, Richard Varn, John Tibbetts, all it would take is you guys jumping in and responding and saying, you know what? There is a business model. We do care a lot about this stuff. In fact, we're very focused on credentials for education. It's just that you being in Facebook, and the Web Application Security Group, you're not seeing that. But let us assure you, here's all the work that's happening. So without that kind of feedback, it just makes it seem like a minority a small set of loud people in the credential CG rather than an entire education industry that wants to see this happen. So specifically, like, you know, John Tibbetts, like Richard Warren, does that make sense? Like, you guys are going to have to start speaking up.
Well, I'm happy to do that, Manu. I mean, you tell me who to talk to and when, but it's interesting that, you know, Luminous got identified 104 separate credential-based initiatives that need something like this to work properly, and they've just broken down into work groups. One of the work group components is reliant on, it's actually stated, it's reliant on us to actually solve the problem. So, what is, you know, how do I get that to him? You let me know offline. How do I get this stuff to these people? Okay.
Okay. John Tibbetts, you're on the queue.
Yeah. You know, I've been hesitant to speak up because actually I was having a nice conversation last week with Dave after on chat after the last meeting. One of the problems that I've had is that I feel that there's so much political, but this isn't a technical issue, it's a political issue. I find that there are areas that I think we should be pushing in only to sort of discover that it's already a politically sensitive term, and I'm not aware of, so, you know, when we talk about very early on talking about focusing on the term identity or focusing on the underlying value of linked data to our solution, and these, it turns out that these are already delicate issues which I simply wasn't aware of. So one of the problems, so maybe what you're saying is that the things that we can speak up on sorry for the phone in the background, is the underlying business need. That is something that I think I could address without any fear of kind of technical and political compromise in this area. And let me make one other point. I feel that a lot of the discussions that we're having and that the feedbacks are coming in from the emails are quite asymmetric in this sense that, you know, we've been sort of going around and around to try to take a very abstract, requirements-based, not refer to specific implementation ideas, and yet the responses that we get aren't saddled with the same constraint. So they immediately come back and say, well, why don't you just use JOTS for the verifiable claims, or why, you know, just use, you know, so the responses tend not to follow that same protocol of just dealing with things in abstract needs. And I actually think that we could make a much better case if we were more free to talk about you know, the kinds of solution ideas that we're talking about, because it's hard to understand this stuff without an idea of what the machinery is. At least that's how it is for me. I mean, I understand things better when I understand the machinery.
Dave Longley, you're on the queue.
Yeah, my view on that is, in your capacity as an expert in responding in sort of the similar ways that we're asking for these other experts to respond who are mentioning various technologies, I think you should go ahead and talk about the technologies if that's what's important to you. So I think within the VCTF, when we're just talking as a group and we're trying to avoid maybe singling out a particular technology and saying it's the better one, you know, clearly we want to do some kind of clear analysis on advantages and disadvantages, but speaking in your capacity as an expert, and we're trying to get your input into the group, I think you should probably kind of freely speak in the same way that these other experts have to offer your opinion, however it is you see fit.
All right. Dan Burnett, you're on the queue.
First of all, I agree a lot with what Dave Longley just said. I want to point out to people who are maybe a little surprised by the asymmetric nature of responses that within the W3C process, this is always going to happen. So there is no stage in the process at which you will not get what will sometimes seem like random comments from people who have absolutely no idea what you've done, but for whom their comments are the entire world, right? And something that you absolutely must positively address, even if you already have. So I think it's important for us to keep in mind what our goal is at this stage, right? Our goal at this stage is to get work started. So we do need to address comments, but only to the extent that those comments might actually block our ability to make progress. Once there is an actual, you know, perhaps working group to work on this, and then we have a task force, but once we actually get to where we're working on, you know, sort of specification documents, that's a little different, okay? At that point, we actually have to address all technical comments. Right now, we just need to justify the work.
Excellently said, Dan. That is spot on. Okay, so let's go to I want to pull out a very specific example for Richard Varn and John Tibbetts and Eric and his team from Accredit Trust. You know, this is an education related thing. So let me try and find it. Vocabulary. Okay, so this is feedback from Harry Halpin that I'm putting in into IRC. Harry Halpin said, okay, so, you know, Harry Halpin's input was another option is to scope down to a particular problem domain. So, for example, a uniform vocabulary for credentials, right? So that input assumes, like, Harry doesn't know that the Lumna Foundation, you know, initiative exists and there's like some $5 million grant that has already gone towards building, you know, a vocabulary for credentials, and he doesn't know that, you know, open badges, you know, exist. Like, this stuff exists, and it exists outside of the W3C. Right, and for very good reason, because the education industry needs to drive, you know, that vocabulary and the set of credentials. The Credential Transparency Initiative, you know, the Technical Advisory Committee for the Credential Transparency Initiative is already working on it. They're already using, you know, JSON-LD. They're already using this identity credential stuff. So, you know, if someone needs to say, hey, the thing that you're proposing, that ship has already sailed. Right, it's already happened, and it's happening outside of W3C, and it's not going to come inside, you know, back inside W3C. Right, what we need W3C to do is to do the basic fundamental technology. We've already got other people working on vocabulary, so that's just to kind of underline that, you know, don't take this expert input. This plays off of what Dan Burnett just said. You know, we've got an expert that's saying asserting something that, you know, hey, maybe you should scope it down to just vocabularies and just work on education vocabularies. And he's making that assertion without understanding that the education industry is already doing that. They're well down that path already. Right. So it's not really valid input. So that's the kind of stuff that, you know, you guys need to push back on, especially as you're experts in the education industry, you know, or healthcare or finance. You need to say, hey, by the way, you know, great input, but, you know, here's my input as an expert in the education industry. This is what I think we need to do, right? Because what W3C management is seeing is they're seeing a whole bunch of assertions made like this, and they're not seeing any pushback from the experts in the education industry on it. So Richard, you know, and John and Eric, I'm happy to point those things out, and maybe the way we should respond is put those comments in a final report that we're going to do after the interviews are over, and then get very specific statements from each of you saying, you know, responding to it as an expert in the education community. Henry is asking, should we do this by replying to the mailing list? I don't think we should. Because that just gets, you just get stuck in a back and forth. I think, you know, let's get, you know, this is the expert's input, you know, Harry's input or Dave Singer's input or, you know, Brad Hill's input. And then we need to get expert input from Richard Varn and, you know, John Tibbetts and Eric Korb about what they think about, you know, the concerns or things that these other folks are raising. Longley, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I was also just going to point out that there was some sort of a presumption that there's a desire by certain people to throw out privacy and security in the feedback, and it would be good to hear from experts whether or not that that's true. I certainly don't think it is, but it would be good to hear that from the experts themselves, so that it's clear that that's not a desire that I think anyone really has.
So I don't think any one of us has said we're going to throw privacy and security out, but there's an assertion in some of the feedback that we don't care about privacy and security. So, you know, we have to, of course, address that. But it's a bit, you know, it's a bit, how long have you been beating your spouse, right? It's very accusatory when no one in this group has said that we don't care about privacy and security. Okay. All right. So let's kind of close up the discussion on this, unless somebody else has any other input on how we do the narratives. So I think let me take an action moment to create a VCTF final report with input from interviewees, and then request feedback from VCTF credential DG members. So, you know, what I'll do is I'll copy and paste this stuff into a document, and then I'll point you, Richard, or Eric, and John Tibbetts, I'll point you guys at very specific pieces of text in there and ask for your responses as an expert in the education sector. Does that sound like a plan? Anyone disagree with that plan? Okay, I'm gonna mix the agenda up a bit and try to do the draft charter proposal first, because that should be fairly quick.
Mona, can I ask one thing quickly?
Go ahead. Yep.
This is Dan Burnett. Hey, I know that we're supposed to be working on use cases. I'm putting together sort of a an outline document for that. One thing that wasn't clear to me from the last call is really where the use cases are, and it may just be that that's the answer, is that they're sort of spread all over. And based on some of the discussion on the mailing list, it's not obvious to me either. So I just wanted to ask if there's anyone who knows where our best collections of use cases are, if they could just start that discussion
item
on the list.
Yes, and that's the last agenda item, so we'll talk about it today, right after the draft charter proposal.
Okay, thank you.
And the call might go over a bit if the editors for the use cases document can hang on for 10 or 15 minutes after the call. That'd be great. Okay, so real quick, I took the feedback that we got so far and took a hack at a draft charter proposal for a working group around verifiable claims / credentials. And we're breaking this up, you know, so this is based on very aggressive feedback and not really pushing back on it. What do we think that we could accomplish with the working group charter? And so the charter, the links in IRC there, the charter proposal, it's broken into at least two phases. So phase one, the goal of phase one is to basically create a data format, a data model and a data format for expressing verifiable credentials, right? So that means the working group will work on a data model, it'll work on a data format or multiple data formats, and it'll work on a signature mechanism, figuring out what the best technology is for accomplishing that. The time frame for the working group is very aggressive, meaning that I started off at 12 months and I extended it to 18 months to give us a bit of slack. But the hope is that the working group would start in 5 months. We would send this to vote in May, June, July time frame, and the working group would be up and running in August. And the only thing that the working group's supposed to work on is data model, data format, and signature mechanism. So that's when we decide whether or not we're going to use, you know, JOTS or Jose or JSON-LD or just plain old JSON or XML or whatever. And after phase one is done, we will have a way of expressing verifiable credentials that we have, you know, a consensus on. And then phase two is to then work on the protocol for moving those credentials around. So how do you issue a credential? How do you store a credential? How do you request and transmit a credential? And that's phase two. And the reason that it's phased in this manner is to try and reduce the amount of people that are going to block. We know that there are people that are going to block the whole protocol work. And what we're trying to do is get a foothold and just get work started, as Dan Burnett said. And once we demonstrate progress with phase one, like if we can say, hey, look, you know, everyone worked together and we got what we got, you know, wanted to get done accomplished, but the initial charter said there is going to be a phase two. We had success in phase one, now to move on to phase two. And the belief is that, you know, even the people that are saying you don't have to, you know, we're wary about this work, we believe that we can get buy-in from them on that. And if we can't get buy-in from them on that, there is no work that they're going to, you know, approve, because this is the most basic, most cutback form of what we could do. Okay, so the first question to the group is, did what I say just make sense, or do you have any questions on what the charter is proposing? The second question is, if you understand what was proposed, are there any concerns around it?
This is Shane. Sorry, I was muted. I'm concerned that the timeline feels aggressive given what we know about the W3C.
So I think we're talking about one spec, and we're talking about a spec that we already have written, like the credential CG spec. So that's going to go in as input, and then the question is, how contentious is it going to be? Like, we know that we're going to have to do the gap analysis between Jose and OpenID Connect and, you know, really JOTS and linked data signatures and all that kind of stuff. So we're going to have to do that gap analysis. We could be doing the gap analysis from now until the group starts so that we provide those as input documents. So yes, it's aggressive, but I mean, what we have to deliver is super, super scaled back. I don't know if you found that convincing, Shane, or if you still think like 18 months is aggressive.
I like being pleasantly surprised, so.
Henry, you're on the queue. And you may be muted.
I'm sorry, I mute myself.
There we go.
Yeah, the phase two, right? So the protocol for issuing, storing, request credentials. So I'm just speaking because I'm coming from LDP, and there's already, in some sense, already, and I know it doesn't quite fit because you probably want a distributed hash table answer, but it seems like there's more than one way of and they're complementary ways of doing that. So here it says the definition of a protocol for issuing, storing, and requesting. I don't know, given that there's already one simple way of doing it and that there could be more complementary ways of doing it, so that's just a remark to that effect. I mean, in that case, it's easier to do it because there's already a protocol, one existing. It feels nearly like that could be done in parallel, right? But I don't know. Yeah.
Let's see. Greg, you're on the queue.
I take Henry's point that there can be a lot of different ways to do things, and perhaps that strikes towards sort of a modular architecture that allows different implementations to slip in along defined interfaces, which might be something group wants to pursue. My comment was much more on the time frame regarding 18 months, which I think my experience in these things is they always take longer than you think. I haven't been in a group that hasn't had to request extensions along the way. And of course, we could always do that, start off with this timeline and then argue about why we need more. But given the nature of the workspace we're playing in, I'm wondering whether we want to risk that, and maybe we should just set at an offset, say, you know, count on 24 months with a effort to try to get the work done sooner.
Got it. So you think 24 months is a more realistic time frame?
Yeah, that's my experience from past working groups.
Okay. Okay, and then, I mean, Shane is kind of echoing that as well, so or you're echoing what Shane's saying. So that's fine. I'll push it out to 24 months, and hopefully we're done in 12. But, yeah, I mean, both of your points, well taken. It, you know, this process of getting it started has taken far, far longer than any of us wanted it to take.
I don't know about anybody else here, but I regret not just forming our own community group because we would have been done already. Or I mean, interest group.
Well,
sorry.
We did.
Interest group instead of this task force thing. Getting the task force started took longer than getting this result. But whatever. Now we know.
Yep. Okay. So that's the charter. If folks could kind of look into the text and read it in a bit more depth, this charter is basically the web payments charter. I just went in and replaced a bunch of web payments language with credentials, deleted a ton of content, and of course reworded it to make sense from a credential standpoint. But the reason we're using this template is because it was heavily, heavily reviewed by W3C membership, and this is what came out of it. So we're trying to use a template that we know has gotten through the W3C membership voting process, and is, you know, fairly concise and cut down. Okay, anything else on the charter before we jump on to use cases? Longley, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out what I said in RC, which is that I think the phase one goals and some of the work there in determining the data formats and things, we should at least be considering that there's a phase two on the horizon, because it might impact how we go about some of that work. So the scope might want to say, you know, our output is only going to be data model, data format, that sort of thing, but it needs to be one that is highly compatible with browser APIs or HTTP APIs or whatever it is that we're interested in doing in phase two.
Yeah, absolutely right. I did forget to say one thing. The charter assumes that the credential CG is going to be working in parallel. And this also gets to Henry's point, which is that LDP, there, you know, if we get phase one done, folks can charge forward on an LDP way of moving credentials around. Credential CG can work on the credential transport protocol for moving credentials around, and other people can choose to create their own protocols if necessary. So all this, you know, phase one is putting in a foundation, a modular foundation that can be reused in a variety of different communities. Right. So, but we do need to know that all that work's going on. So we're building the phase one stuff so that it plugs in really nicely into a phase two transport protocol. Okay. So we are coming to the end of the hour. Let's talk about use cases document really quickly. Dan Burnett asked the question about where the current use cases are. Dan, there's a Google Doc that has the latest language in it. I don't know if anyone has that at their fingertips, eventual use. I got it. Okay, so Dan, this is the latest use cases.
I think I put it in.
I don't. Is my link is different? No, it's yeah. Good, great. So that's the latest use cases document. There is also a GitHub link, which thank you, Shane.
I put in.
That's the link to the latest spec. Thank you, Shane. So the idea here, Dan, is to move the stuff in the Google Doc over to the thing into the respec doc below. Make sense, Dan?
And okay, so and here's what I've been doing. I apologize. I thought I'd have more progress on this by now. I'm updating the document in the Open Creds repository so that it has the look and feel of the web payments use cases document, because that's something Manu asked me to do. I was doing that first. Then what I'd hoped to do was divide it into sections and then say, you know, anybody who wants to be an editor, and I think there were four of us who volunteered, you know, here's a section you can work on, you know, and Dan, here's a section you can work on or whatever, so that we can do merges independently and not collide with one another, and we can actually work on the same document. It should be fine. That's my hope. Anyway.
Plus one to that. So that's great. And so, you know, this is a coordination effort between Shane, Greg, Brian, and Dan. So, you know, you guys figure out what the best way to, you know, work together is. And I think what Shane just outlined is great. It's Shane will create the structure, and then each one of you may take a section. So we have, we have the sections are like issuing, revoking, consuming, managing. There's a section on endorsing. And so that's kind of where we are.
Right. And if you go and look at the Google Doc document, you'll see that there's a lot of use cases in there that are written kind of okay. You know, I mean, they're phrased in clever ways or whatever. One of the things I thought would be useful, and I feel like you've already done some of this, Manu, is to put in some flow diagrams along with the use cases to sort of illustrate what people are, you know, so there's some graphics to go along with the text.
Yep.
But that's kind of like, you know, that's not an immediate requirement, but I think it would be really helpful.
Totally agree.
I do have a question about this. In fact, I was just about to push a pull request, just about to send in a pull request with a blank, empty document for use cases. So I think what I'm confused by is that you say you want it in the Open Creds repository. I was assuming you would actually want it in the VCTF repository on GitHub.
No, because there is a different IPR policy for the VCTF stuff, and I believe that the Credential CG IPR policy gets the stuff cleared faster than the Web Payments IG IPR policy. All right, so the community IPR policy, I think, has like a 90-day window for you to exclude yourself. Otherwise, it just goes under W3C IPR policy. Whereas an IG has to produce a document before IPR is clean. So the larger organizations want the stuff done in the community group so that the IPR clears faster than it would in the IG. Did that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
It does.
And that's not a bad thing, right? We talked earlier about how the W3C lends credibility and infrastructure and, you know, all of those things. And, you know, this is part of that. But they're giving us an opportunity here to start our activity without running afoul of their rules. And I think that's great. Let's just do it.
Yeah.
Right.
So OpenCreds, and then again, you know, we need to. I will. I will have a detailed discussion with them on, you know, whether or not they want to pull it into the IG. But we've already had this discussion once with the web payments work, and the decision was made to do it in a CG, as much work in the CG before you pull the stuff into the IG. Because at that point, the IPR process turns into molasses and it goes very slow. Okay.
Sure.
There was another question that Greg Kellogg asked over email, which was, what's up with this, one repo per spec thing that some of the new groups are doing? The web payments group is operating under that new policy, so we have split a number of the web payments CG specs into their own separate repository. They have their own issue tracker. They have their own GitHub I/O pages. And that is working pretty well, meaning that, you know, there are no real issues with it. It's arguable what the upsides are. I think Greg Kellogg made the point that, you know, you can publish multiple specs in a single repo, and it's really not that big of a deal, and that's true. So there's this, you know, the W3C is moving over to GitHub as the main way that they do issue processing and spec, you know, processing and all that kind of stuff. And they're trying to do one spec per repo. The primary upside being cited is that all your issues are assigned to a spec. So the issues and the spec are tightly coupled. And then you can take that repository and hand it over to a working group when that time comes. So you can take, you know, we could work on the use cases document in the open creds, in the credentials community group. And once we do the final specification agreement, we can hand it over, that use cases document, we can hand over to a credentials working group or a verifiable claims working group. And the way that we do the handoff is by doing a GitHub repository reassign to the appropriate working group. So that basically preserves history. It allows you to move these between various groups so that one group has kind of control over it, along with all the issues at any given time. Greg, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I'm just curious how you deal with things like shared definitions, bibliographies, things like that, for which having a single repository is useful. For that matter, automated tools that allow you to make sure that different self-referencing specifications are consistent. You don't wait till publication time to find bad links and things like that.
Right. So Shane has done a fantastic addition to Respec that makes that much easier. I mean, that you can have a remote vocabulary, a remote glossary, and you can pull that in dynamically, and it only pulls in the terms that the spec uses. So we're doing that in the Web Payments Interest Group. So the Web Payments Interest Group has published this glossary, and the Web Payments Working Group consumes that glossary in a variety of specs, actually, in all the Web Payments Community Group specs. So we have been using that, and we've been using that mechanism, and both of those repositories are separate from one another. And it's been working pretty well for us. I was pleasantly surprised. I thought it would be kind of a nightmare to manage all that stuff, but it's nice because, you know, you go and you modify one glossary, and every single one of the specs dynamically update as a result of that. Did that make sense, Greg? And Dan Burnett, you might have some input on this as well.
I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
Just respond to that. Yeah, I can certainly see that. I know when we were doing the CSV stuff, oftentimes there would be a working group decision which would require changing multiple specs at the same time, and it was convenient to branch off to make those consistent so that they all were checked in simultaneously in the same set of consistency. Whereas really no mechanical mechanism to do that across multiple different repositories that I'm aware of, but I'm happy to adapt to whatever the group decides to do.
And then Dan, I think you were next, and then Shane.
Yes, I was just going to say that, I can adapt as well. Either way is fine. I think I found that it depends on the group, right? And it depends on the specifications as to how much commonality there will be. But in general, we've found it much rarer to need to do the same updates to multiple specs, the same exact updates, than it is to be able to do updates and ensure that you have no risk of affecting another specification. So when it comes to common updates, it's usually not that hard to get the parties involved for the different documents together and say, okay, we need to push this. And I agree they can get out of sync. For the WebRTC work, we tended to have one-way references in our specifications, so it wasn't really an issue. You know, the one specification defined a whole bunch of terms, and the other specification just pointed to it, right? So we didn't need to do any inclusions or anything funny like that. There was perhaps a little bit of bibliography sharing, but that was slight, and the amount of work to add bibliography entries into a specification document is actually very small, assuming that the entry has been added into the master, sort of the master database.
Shane, you're on the queue.
I have a question for you at the end here, Mona. Don't let me forget. But just talking about the bibliography thing you mentioned, Dan. One of the things that we've done with common stuff in W3C specs recently is had local bibliography entries where it wasn't appropriate to put them in spec ref yet because we're still in development, right? So maybe there's an editor draft or whatever. And so having that sort of common JavaScript that's getting included that just brings in that biblio entry helps a lot, just like bringing in the common terms. My question for you, Manu, is how do we – I'm not familiar with something you said earlier, and you said I did it, so I'm impressed that I've done something I'm not familiar with. How are we bringing in common terms from a different repository?
Yeah, I'm finding the link for you.
I mean, I know how to do it from within the same repository, but...
Yeah, we're doing it from a different one. We're actually pulling in... Web Payments 1.0 Glossary, latest. Okay, see this document here? This is the latest glossary from the Web Payments IG. We actually pull that in to the... Let me find the Web Payments... browser API. We actually pull that glossary into this document in real time. So if you scroll down, there's a terminology section that has like payer, payee, payment app. The entire terminology section is pulled in at runtime from that glossary in a completely separate repository. And you added that functionality, Shane. Thank you. You did it a while ago. It was like at the beginning of the Web Payments IG thing. You were like, I have an idea, and you got it implemented in like a couple of hours, and we've been using it since. And it worked beautifully.
Neat. Okay, cool.
Yep, so that's a solved problem. Like, we know how to do that. We will probably want to have a common glossary, just split it out, and then we can pull that glossary in dynamically into whatever specs we're creating.
Oh, my God. I see how it works. I didn't – the extension I did was not intended to do this. Holy cow.
Yep.
I'm shocked that that works.
But it does.
Wow. I'm really good. I had no idea.
All right, so I think, we can take the rest of this discussion offline. Are the editors at least in sync with what we're trying to do? We're going to take the Google Doc. We're going to, Shane's going to modify the basic use cases document to have a structure, and then each editor is going to take a chunk of use cases out of one of those sections and move them over so folks don't stomp on each other. And then after that's done, we can then make the decision on to splitting these things into separate repos or splitting the terminology out into a separate repo and things of that nature. Anyone have any issue with that plan?
Nope, that's fine.
Okay, perfect. And I'll be on that channel. We're all on there already, so great. And you know, I'm working on this all day today, so it's all I've got. I should push something today.
Awesome. Thank you, Shane. And thank you, everyone, for staying over. Apologies for running 15 minutes over, but this was good, a good thing to do. Okay, thanks, everyone. Have a great rest of the week. We have a lot of interviews this week, so if you want to show up to them, feel free, but it's not required. I'll send out those interview invites to the mailing list before we have those interviews. Thanks, everyone. Have a great week. Talk to you next week. Bye.